Rosalind Elena McGrath of Intuitive Learning Creations, and you're listening to Out There with TJ Ryan.
This week, Clifford Michaels, Cliff Michaels. He's a former Wall Street investment banker. He obviously was in a position, a job that is very cutthroat, I would imagine. I've never done it. And I would think you'd have to be a little ruthless to succeed. I don't know. I guess he can answer that. But he had a life-changing illness, and it totally turned him in another direction. And he wrote an amazing book, Harnessing Heaven, 7 Principles That Can Change Your Life. And so Cliff is joining me today. How are you doing, Cliff?
Hi, TJ. Thank you for having me.
How's
I just want to add one thing. I am still working on Wall Street.
Okay. And are you ruthless and cutthroat and win at all costs?
No. God help us. No.
And
not
you
at
can
all.
Be successful without doing that?
Yeah, I'm in service. I'm here to help others. I'm here to help people. So whether it's helping them do retirement planning or helping them clarify their life purpose, either way.
So you've seen a different picture. And can you tell us a little bit about your life then, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure. So it was like anyone else's for a long time, married, 2 kids, living in the suburbs, stressed out, working all hours of the day on Wall Street. And just when I thought that maybe things were going along fairly well, we had just had our first child, I was stricken with kidney cancer. And it really just shocked me, and I was like a deer looking at headlights. I didn't know what to do. So I went for surgery, and then afterwards I spoke with the oncologist, and, surprisingly, many doctors don't really deal with kidney cancer. It's only maybe 2 or 3% of those cancers. So I really had my work cut out for me. And I went on an experimental drug, and I basically from there did anything and everything I could put my mind to try to heal myself. And that's how this all unfolded, in that I was reading books and trying to ground myself emotionally, and I changed my diet, and I was trying to eat alkaline and do all the healthy things. And because while you can cure kidney cancer from surgery, if it reoccurs, you only have about a 15% or less chance of survival. Mm. So I realized I had to just experiment, and I had to let my curiosity lead me. And so after a while, I stumbled on this meditation circle only about 10 miles from my house. It's what they called a spiritual circle. And in this circle of people, there was a very metaphysical person, this medium, if you will, that led the group. And the kind of people that went to this were not all these artsy-fartsy types, but, there was an attorney there, there was a nurse. There was a school teacher, there was myself on Wall Street. I mean, it was a real hodgepodge of professionals. So I was thinking, oh, this is interesting. I'll get to ground myself because I figured maybe I had kidney cancer because of my adrenal glands. I was all stressed out working on a trading desk, so that must be it. So I figured if I meditate and I ground myself, that would help prevent this reoccurrence that I was fearful of. Well, after about 6 months of going once a week for 2 hours and doing meditations and some psychic exercises, my curiosity turned into intent because I started feeling things around me and I started sensing things that I didn't think were possible. I realized, and so did the other people in the group here, that we are not alone. Mm. We think we are as human beings. We don't really give a whole lot of thought other than when we go to religious services that we're speaking to God. But the fact is that energy, that intelligence is always around us.
Mm-hmm.
And with enough effort, anybody, because look at me, I did it, anybody, if they want to put their minds to it and want to dedicate themselves every week for a couple hours, I mean, I was there for 5 years. I'm not going to tell you, it just takes a few times, a few sessions. But after 5 years of doing this, I became very sensitive. I had this ability to tune in to what was around me. And develop the ability to communicate with the other side.
With the other side, and you're talking about people that have crossed over, or angels, or
yes, all the above.
All of the above.
It's not easy to do, and even at this point, I have to really meditate and get into an altered state. It's not a simple thing for anyone, even someone who's trained. But It can be done with enough effort and enough dedication and enough discipline. And it came to a point where, after about 5 years of doing this, that I was getting messages from the people in Circle, the people I saw each week, from other people I didn't know, and from even some of the communication I have. Everyone was saying, write. Collate your experiences and put them down on paper and write. And I thought to myself, that's crazy. I'm on Wall Street. I'm not going to write about this. People are going to judge me. But after a while, I realized how much positive experience and how much I realized that there was a lot for others to follow. Because once you start to realize that life doesn't end just because physically we cease to breathe, right? Once you realize there's more to life than that, it kind of changes your attitude about a great many things. All of a sudden, you don't sweat the small stuff. All of a sudden, you realize that your deeds you do in life may have greater meaning because they're carried with you forever, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good or bad. Good or bad. So let that be a lesson to what we're all seeing in the media these days. So I realized it was just too important to keep to myself. So that's how the idea of actually writing this book came to be. And what came about were the 7 principles for clarifying your life purpose. The first 3 chapters is about me and how I got to be where I am. And then the 7 principles in the last 2 chapters is how you can try to follow my footsteps.
That's what's cool about it. You know, it's your story, it's your journey, and but also it's self-help, and you're giving people the tools, at least what I was taking away from it, so that we can, you know, it's a lot of times you go to a psychic or you go to a medium or you go to people that channel, and I'm sure they have good intentions, but a lot of times they make people dependent on them. And I always embrace the people that are willing to teach others how to do it for themselves, because we all can do it, can't we?
That's right. And, you know, I was discussing the book on Facebook, where there's a Harnessing Heaven Facebook site, and somebody said, no, you need to talk about God. And my response was, there's a piece of God in every one of us. It's called the soul. That's what lives forever. And so when you start to realize that there's something deep within each of us that is from the Creator, you begin to realize a number of things. First, we're a lot more similar to each other than we are different.
Absolutely.
The second thing is that energy that's within all of us, it's sort of in our bellies. When you talk about getting that gut feel, or just something doesn't feel right, that's sometimes your soul giving you a feeling, and it's usually you can usually feel it in the abdomen or in the heart. Something just doesn't feel right.
Right.
And, you know, when you say it. And that soul comes into life within an idea that it wants to express itself, that it wants to experience, and so forth. And so through meditation, you can get a little bit more in touch with yourself and with God. It doesn't matter what your religion is.
Right. Yeah, I like that as well, that you expressed that it doesn't matter where you what you believe in, because, you know, that's what separates a lot of us, too. I belong to this, I belong to that, I belong, and it's like, the truth I see in all of them, and that's what you kind of outlined in your book, is that love is the greatest connector of all things, isn't it?
That's right. Love is a universal language. And that kind of takes you into the 7 principles, and I can just state them quickly here. Number 1 is loving each other. Number 2, thoughts and emotions are alive. Number 3, very important, the power of unity. Number 4, that's number 3. Number 4, school is never out. We're here to learn lessons. Number 5, creating is always in season. We're here to create and manifest what our soul has brought with it from heaven. The orchestra behind the scenes is principle number 6. We're never alone. Every
mm-hmm.
prayer is.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7, your thinking equals your experience.
Yes.
Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react to it.
Well, let me ask you this now, because, and I think you mentioned this in the book as well, but so many people I talk to about dealing with illness, and I do a lot of the interviews I do are usually based on natural healing, even energetic healing, but most people will tell me, just what everybody has told me, their illness came from their thoughts, and their 90% of it comes from our thoughts. Do you feel that way?
I think that there are emotions that flow from the thoughts, right?
Right, so thoughts and emotions.
Right. It starts with a thought, and you begin to have a well of or some feeling to that that's attached to that thought, and then you get a well of emotions. And what you do with those emotions is up to each of us.
If you don't let go of those emotions, if they're negative, can that lead to, do you feel that led to your illness?
I think so. I think it certainly contributed to it. It's important to release those emotions. It's important to find out how it works for you to release them, whether it's a walk in the park or having a dog or a spouse or going to the gym or going to something spiritual or a synagogue or a church or whatever it is. But you have to learn to release them because those emotions, they're not only within ourselves and can get stuck, sort of the issues in our tissues can get stuck there, but you also can affect those around you.
Absolutely.
You know, those around us with our emotions as well.
Not only that, but maybe you can affect generations. If you hold on to, you know, there's kind of a theory that says we don't inherit the genes so much, but we inherit more of cell memory from our, all the ancestors that have come before us. So if they were alcoholics, that cell memory is passed on through generation, generation, generation. And usually souls will come along and try to break that. It may be a purpose of a soul to say, I'm going to break this routine. So do you believe that also we can affect future generations with the things?
I think it's possible. I haven't done a lot of work in that area, but I think it's possible because it's energy. Mm-hmm. And energy continues.
So is that what we are in our base? Because you talked about that. You believe that we're kind of just energy to begin with, aren't we?
I think we're thought forms.
Thought forms, energy.
And energy, thought. I do think so. And then we come and manifest in the physical, in this heavier life that we have. And we're here to experience lessons that are more easily learned in this environment. And also, it's a gift. Hmm. Anybody that doesn't think that life is a gift, when you're in energy or when you're in spiritual form, there's no taste. You can't taste the delicious foods that you like and the delicious desserts that you like. So, I mean, there are some, you know, there's no sex. I mean, there are certain attributes of being physical.
Right.
I mean, this is a gift to experience.
How do you know these things, Cliff? What makes you believe these things?
I know them from communication, from those on the other side.
When you say those on the other side, can you be more specific?
Who well, you know, all of us are born with someone looking after us. It kind of reminds me of that movie with James Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life.
Right, Clarence.
So all of us have Clarence, that's right, Clarence. All of us have someone looking after us. And some of us may have more than one spiritual guide or angel looking after us. If you want to get deeper into that, that I think has to do with your vocation at times, whether or not you're out promoting maybe religion or something, let's say, to that effect, or you're a doctor. But without getting too technical on that, we all have someone on the other side that is looking after us, and then we all have those ancestors that are still around us. And the reason is because as we are going through life, they are also getting a chance to experience your life. Mm-hmm. And they're getting a chance to sprinkle some of their own lessons that they learned while they were alive to make sure you don't also commit those errors. Now, someone who's maybe not as metaphysically advanced, that maybe cannot very easily think that they're communicating, I will tell you right now, every night that we go to bed, every night when we're dreaming, we are at a bridge between our two worlds. And for those of you that may have a deceased mother or father, and you have your mother that consistently or your father that comes in to talk to you in your dreams, that's a little more than just your imagination. That really can happen when they're sharing ideas or lessons or inspiration, inspiring us to go ahead and take that new job and to do the things that we may have fear of making a decision on. So that's how we are communicated with quite a bit. In fact, I wrote this book a lot from the dream state. I would wake up in the mornings. Yeah, because I started writing, and it was hard for me, and I was judgmental about it, and I was judging myself. After a while, though, after about 6 months, I would begin to wake up in the morning, and I was commuting from New Jersey to New York, and it was an hour and a half, hour and 20-minute commute. I'd get in the train, and I don't know where it was all coming from. I mean, at that point, I wasn't sure. I figured it out eventually, but I was just riding away. All of a sudden, every morning I would wake up. Before I got off the train, I would have a page or two written, and this went on for 3 years. So we are all closer to that other environment, that other dimension when we're in the sleep state. And I'll mention one other thing here. Paul McCartney and Rod Stewart have interviews out there, and you could probably find them online, where they both swear, Paul McCartney and Rod Stewart, that they will go to sleep, they will have an intention before they go to bed, and they'll wake up in the morning with a melody.
Yeah, I've heard that many times.
They wrote a lot of their songs that way.
There's a guy by the name of, is it Michael Martin Murphy? He wrote Wildfire, and he said in an interview that he went to sleep one night, and the biggest song of his career just came to his in a dream about a magical horse. So I think that in itself is kind of cool, you know, how those things come forward. We can get whatever we want if we're just willing to tap into it and receive it. Listen and be patient and receive it, can't we?
That's correct. The subconscious soul's right there to,
within reason. When I say whatever we want, that doesn't mean like, well, I'm going to make myself Lord of the Universe. No, that's probably not going to be
right. You're not going to wake up with the lottery numbers, okay? Because the information that you receive, any one of us, is based on need, not greed.
Mm-hmm. So, and desire and belief. Actually, I've known some people that have actually dreamt about lottery numbers and won. So maybe it's the intention that you have behind it.
Maybe it's the intention, but usually it's based on need. They don't usually promote greed too much.
So. Right. Not
maybe
so much
in that case. Maybe in that case, there was a lesson for that person by winning.
Right.
Was able to then go somewhere else in their lives that they never would have been able to go to learn certain lessons. Perhaps that could be part of it.
And who knows? But everybody's path is different, and sometimes what appears to be a negative path is really maybe serving other people. We don't realize it. That do you think we live more than once?
I do. And there's a lot out there on that, whether it's Dr. Raymond Moody or Brian Weiss. There's a lot of information on that. I will just say that I do believe that because it makes sense. It makes sense because if life is eternal and you've been able to learn a lot of lessons by coming onto the earth and living a life, why not return and learn more?
That would only make sense, wouldn't it? How would you get it the first time around, too?
It's just too much.
Right. It's like, oh, okay, I had one shot. I lived 70 years, and oh, boy, I screwed up. Too bad.
We don't go to school for 1 year. You go to college for four. You go to high school, right? You do more than 1 year.
Yeah.
So why not, do more than one lifetime?
And why not experience as many different things as we can? Certainly we can't do it all.
Right.
People say live life to the fullest. Well, you can't possibly probably do everything there is to do one time around. And like you kind of hinted around, we're here to experience these things, aren't we?
That's right. And we tend to, from our vantage point, we tend to label everything as good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that they're just experiences most of the time.
Right. So even people that we think are doing bad things or bad things that happen, it's really part of our soul's growth so that we're getting an opportunity. If you don't get the lesson, it's going to keep coming back to you again and again and again. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I do. Thank you. That's great. Thank you for putting it like that.
And so if TJ, let's say TJ, a brick falls on his head one day because he's maybe being a jerk to somebody. And so then he goes, oh, I don't get that. Then a bigger brick falls on his head the next day. And finally, maybe he finally realizes, I got to stop doing that. Because I always think there are overall, granted, there's no good and bad. It's all experience. But really, Don't you think, Cliff, that everything is driving us towards being loving beings, returning to what we are?
I do think that that's part of it, but I just want to go back to the brick falling on your head.
Mm-hmm.
Because too often we believe that if there's a insurmountable challenge or something, that it's bad. But in fact, it's those challenges that we overcome that help us to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's years later that we look back and realize with more clarity how important it was to for us to experience those hardships.
Right. Sometimes you need to go through some real bumps But I also see it as this way. It's like it doesn't have to be that way. Maybe if you're a younger soul, you might have to learn things the hard way. But I think the more you've been around the block several times, you realize I don't have to have all my lessons being like a steamroller running over me. It can be gentle. And my lessons in life, my experience has been, Cliff, that I am given a first warning or like a gentle nudge. And then if I don't listen, so it's always done with gentleness. And I think I think I'm the one, not God, that's setting that up. I don't think God gets involved in that way and says, TJ, you're a bad man, I'm going to punish you. It's more like TJ has laid out with his guides and his angels these different wake-up calls at different points in his life that are going to tell him, wake up, you chose this, and if I don't wake up, you're going to get a little more of a sledgehammer. And the next time, it's a big rock coming at me going, wait. Now, and I'm saying that not literally, but, you know, it's something that gives you a little more of a wake-up call. And I think at that point, too, Cliff, don't you have the option to say, because this has happened to my friends, there's some people I know that are born with great psychic ability, and it's too much for them. And they've asked that it be taken away. You know, because you come into this lifetime to obviously help others, those that are born with that gift. And it was overwhelming because they would pick up on events that were happening across the world. And I think we have a choice, even while we're here, to change things, too.
Yeah, I would say that there's a lot of truth to that, in that spirit, if I can just describe them as that, a spirit has the ability to sort of like a receiver, an FM receiver.
Mm-hmm.
They can fine-tune you so that you are more sensitive or less sensitive. They can open you up if they want to. And that's part of the process and the development that occurs when a person goes to a spiritual circle. Over time, they are determining how much they want to open a person up, if they're ready for it.
If they're ready for it.
What are their intentions? And so if your friends didn't have the intention to use those gifts, then sure, they could be toned down, absolutely.
It seems like a good thing before we get here. You know, we say, well, this is going to be great. I'm going to learn this, and I'm going to do all that. And then we get here, and we forget who we are. And it's like, well, I don't know. I'm afraid of the unknown. That's why I do this show. That's why I do the show, so we don't become afraid of it anymore. The more you talk about it, the more it gets out in the open. And I salute you for writing this, because you're probably... Do you take any grief for writing this book?
It was like coming out of the closet, and I don't think the full brunt of it yet has unfolded in terms of everybody that knows me seeing this book, but it comes out today, by the way.
Really? Wow.
It's out today on Amazon, the first day, so...
I strongly recommend it. Harnessing Heaven. It really is talking about tapping into, I mean, many, many things, but tapping into what our full potential. And there's so many things that resonate with me that I've learned on my own and through others as well, that a lot of people, do you find there's a movement right now? A lot of this stuff is coming forward.
People are in search of.
Hmm.
Let's put it like that. People are in search of. They want more, and not necessarily money. Because as far as spirit is concerned, success is not defined by money, but by our happiness, peace, and whether we're able to fulfill our purpose for being here. And I think people want more at this point, especially these younger generations, the millennium or the X, is the X or the Y? There's a lot of letters there.
I know. Generation X, generation whatever.
It's all over. But
it's a label.
It's a label. But they're not all defined by just money.
No.
Some of them want to take jobs where they can work out during the day, where there's a shower in the office, or they get a break, or they want this, or they want that. And so people are looking to be fulfilled in other ways. And this search in terms of finding out who we are and the search of trying to discover and peel back the layers, if you will, as to what life is all part of this movement. It's slowly taking hold, but you're right.
There seems to be a lot of people at least starting to wake up, and we see it in this political process, too. This has been a big... I look at the different candidates and what they each stand for, and I see people starting to question things that have always been there, standards, old standards, and we're starting, and I think we have to. You have to question all things. Well, you don't have to be a jerk about it, but question everything around us.
Right. I agree 100%, and I'll give you an example that may be even more apparent, but people aren't thinking about, and that's the Middle East.
Mm.
Think about the Middle East 20, 25 years ago, with all these dictators and powers and that were basically oppressing the peoples. And think about now, because of the information and technology revolution and all the phones and access to the internet, what is going on in the Middle East and all these power struggles that are going on from year to year. It's all part of this. It's definitely part of this unfolding and people trying to discover.
People are willing to stand up to their governments, which they never did before, and we've seen this in the Ukraine. I remember when there was a story about in Ukraine when the soldiers, and the Russian people that were living there, I believe, were a minority, and the Ukrainian soldiers were cracking down on them because they were protesting. This is before the Russians went in, and they held up mirrors, believe it or not. They held up mirrors back at the soldiers so the soldiers could see what they looked like chasing these people down. And that caused a lot of the soldiers to back down and reflect, which I thought was such a cool way to protest. And then we saw in Egypt how they just are not going to tolerate a corrupt, well, it still probably is corrupt, but they're not a corrupt government that they feel was not in their best. And people are doing this, and they, you know, it used to be you didn't stand up if you didn't have weapons to support you. And now it seems like people don't have any fear. They know this is what they want to do.
That's awesome that you mentioned that. I didn't know that they were holding up mirrors.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I may have the facts slightly off, but I know in Ukraine this happened.
That's unbelievable. In fact, I think I have a one line in the book here in Loving Each Other, Principle 1, where I say everyone you meet is your mirror.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that.
Yeah, we attract what we're like.
So we can learn from it, right?
Yes. That is really awesome that they were holding up mirrors. Wow.
Yeah, isn't it? I'd have to look that up again, but I read that quite a while back.
Oh, that, yeah.
But so, the things you say in your book are really touch, I think, in a deeper level. And that's what I like. And you go about it. Now, here's the thing that I loved probably the most of all, because, and maybe you're not exactly trying to point it out in this direction, but you talk about how our work life really is part of our spiritual life. And so many people I talk to or deal with just don't get it. Because it's all, every contact, every moment of every day is all part of our spiritual life. And we separate the two, don't we?
Yes. So all experiences are just experiences. So we label it work, or we label it, you know, leisure, or we label it, you know, relationship, or we label it one thing or another, but they all count. So, you know, a lot of us, myself included, we spend a lot of time in our work lives. So it's important to consider this, you know, and somewhere along the line, if you're not in alignment between why your soul is here and the sort of work you do, you're going to start to feel it.
You're not going to feel right.
At some point, you're not going to feel right. There's going to be something that doesn't feel right. It may affect you emotionally, mentally, maybe even physically, but something's not right. You're just going to feel that.
Did the old, would you say the old Clifford lied to people, manipulated, tried to take advantage? Did you ever do any of that?
No. It was not really, no, because I was still always a nice guy. or a good guy. I mean, this is who I was born at. I was a nice boy when I was growing up. You know, that never felt okay to me.
Okay.
Not tell the truth. So I was always someone who told the truth.
So even as a Wall Street investment banker, you never felt
that. Yeah. No, and there's a lot of good people. No, but TJ, there's a lot of good people on Wall Street also. So, you know, that's just a stereotype.
Okay, sorry.
The Wolf on Wall Street, it really was a true story, but again, that was just one guy who, you know, went awry, as did Michael Boesky, right? The name was a lot of people over history. But unfortunately, everyone gets a bad rap. But there's a lot of honest people there, too, you know.
But there was kind of the mentality that, I don't know if before your illness you felt this way, but that we had to win at all costs. And now, I guess what I see around me where I live here in a smaller community, there's some people that in smaller communities, usually there's like one person that runs the whole town or owns a good part of it. You know, they built up a monopoly. Kind of like going back to that movie you were talking about with Jimmy Stewart. And so these people think it's okay to be ruthless during their day job, but then they go home to family and friends and they have love for others. And I guess what I was asking, what I'm saying is, take that love and apply it to your work and you'll be even more successful. Do you believe that love can actually bring us more success?
Yeah, yes, because that talks about unity, actually. It really, that we're here to support each other and to be in service for one another, helping our souls progress and helping us develop and unfold here in the earth. And you can't do that unless you're here for each other. It's sort of an illusion that we're all separate from one another, you know, because when you cross over, we're all one race in the heavenly realm. We're all the same.
Absolutely.
And we're when we support that, yeah, I mean, we invite lessons, bad lessons.
So this is where I see a great separation. At least it has been for a long time. Not just in our culture, but probably many cultures as well that embrace, you know, business, winning at all costs. It seems like it's gotten a lot worse, but maybe I'm just looking at it, more aware of it in the last 20, 30 years. And people don't mind sticking it to someone else or even sticking it to the public. If you're the public, they stick it to you. As far as the product they sell you, they don't tell you that it's unhealthy for you or that maybe it's not safe for you, and they know that, and this is going on.
That troubles me. That troubles me a great deal because I'm allergic to preservatives, so I completely understand where you're coming from.
And so I see that we're all going to eventually change because it's what we are in our nature. To what we're doing is going against our true essence, isn't it?
Yes, but I just want to digress this for a second. I don't know if it's any worse today than it was 30 or 50 or, you know, years ago, but what I think is different is the transparency because of technology.
Mm.
When we heard about those stories a week ago, I don't know if it was in Minnesota or Louisiana or Dallas, they're similar in that so many people were able to capture these events on their phones.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Record it. And so that creates great awareness instantly. And so we're all aware if there's a problem. We're all aware very quickly. Information is so available on the Internet. So if something's not good for you and then somebody starts blogging that, immediately everybody else knows. So, you know, I think that's a very important attribute of how society is moving, which is good. It'll help us evolve.
And don't you think also not only are we moving through the technology, but we're also consciously connected. So every thought that we put out there is really being received, regardless of whether we realize it or not. And there's this, I've heard people say that there's a collective. If we reach a collective thought, group of thoughts, and I don't know what the number is, but that's when you have great shifts in awareness. It's like X amount of beings start to receive and think a certain way. It has a greater potential to influence everyone.
Mm. Well, that's the energy.
Mm. And so if we're all connected, just our thoughts alone. If you want to make a difference in the world, and some people say, well, what am I going to do? Start thinking different and start being different. You don't have to go out and beat down doors or stand in front of a million people and make a speech.
Right. So it may be one person at a time, but as people come together and think more in unison, it magnifies or multiplies that energy, those thoughts. That's right.
Our spiritual life, it coincides with our daily life, even on Wall Street. You talk about that. And I think, like you mentioned in the book, you kind of hinted around about that there is some kind of awakening going on, or this is a time. Now, why do you feel that this is a time when things are going on?
Yeah, I felt that way just as I had mentioned before, when I started really thinking about the Middle East and how it had been the same for thousands of years, and now all of a sudden that was becoming one big upheaval. And I started thinking about the great advances in technology over the last 25 and 30 years, because it's so different now than it's ever been before in our history. I started thinking about the advances in technology. And I just had this feeling, and also a little bit of communication with those who watch out over us, that this is a time of unfolding and evolving. And it's going to take more time, maybe another 25 years or so, maybe longer than that. These kinds of things don't happen overnight.
Right. It could take actually hundreds of years, I've heard. You know, it's funny because the people I talk to, whether they're psychics, mediums, guys like yourself, anybody, I talk to everybody and anybody. So many people have been saying this for a number of years now, that there's a great shift in consciousness, awareness. And it really was, the beginning was 2012. Some people tie it into that there was the Hopis and the Mayans were really saying that this was the beginning of a new age. We lived through the age of basically duality, control, enslavement. Now we're beginning to realize who we are. This awakening is taking place. It's a spiritual awakening, and we're going to demand more. And we have to balance. Do you think we also have to balance things out more, because maybe we're a little bit too much this way or that way?
That's an individual. That's based on each individual.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What you think and how you want to live may be different than I, may be different than someone else. What I need is a balance in my life. Might mean I need to go to my son's baseball game at night. You know what I mean? For
right.
You, it might be sitting back and listening to music. So whatever it is for each of us, but you're absolutely right. We need balance. Have to be balanced. We're multidimensional beings. I do think that some of this may have been born in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
Because there was great change back then also, and little by little it's been growing and evolving and developing into other things, and I think I mentioned that too somewhere in the book. But yeah, since 2012 for sure also. I mean, it's just as if things just keep getting sprinkled in and we just keep going forward at a quicker pace.
This one's on the other side. Do they have any messages? I don't know if you talk about that in your book, but do they talk about any things that are coming forward or changes, or what is it, that direction we should go, or the direction that we are going?
I can answer that a couple of different ways. One is opening of the hearts, and each of us needs to learn two lessons here. Acceptance and tolerance. And if we can master acceptance, we can find maybe some inner peace there from loving ourselves and accepting ourselves, because it's got to start with ourselves, okay? Mm-hmm. And not fuel our own egos, okay? And then from there, it can move outward. And tolerance, I mean, I don't have to tell you about tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
The way we navigate our heart outward to the world. We need to become more tolerant of each other and create that space for freedom with each other and creativity, and whether it's a lesson in becoming more patient, okay? So acceptance and tolerance are the keys to opening our hearts, and if we can do that, a whole lot is going to happen here. We're going to be able to move forward. And what happens when we don't embrace those lessons for opening the heart is sometimes it's forced upon us, and that's when we have these great natural disasters, okay? And what happens from there is we have these lessons of compassion, where it forces us to rather than take what we can from our neighbor, we ask our neighbors what they need, right? So we can help each other.
Right.
We get these lessons of compassion. The earth can be a teacher.
Absolutely. And some would say that the earth is balancing itself out, and it too is evolving, like we are.
It is. There is a consciousness there. I can't tell you how and exactly what, but it is alive on some level. It's energy.
Do you believe in channeling at all? Do you believe that, in channeling, Cliff?
There are people that can do that.
Because on my show, we've channeled Gaia and, you know, Earth, and it's been fun listening to what it had to say. And it really is just like any one of us. It's an energy. We're all energy, right? So who's
That's
to say
correct.
That consciousness is not in everything that we see around us? There has to be consciousness.
There is, including even plant life.
And bugs. People I know hate bugs and they kill them. It's like, well, that's consciousness.
Well, there's a spiritual energy that creates all life. I'm not sure that there's a consciousness in the insect world, though. I'm not sure. There is when your dogs, I can tell you that. Your dogs and your cats and your horses.
I have when I was, this was a few years ago, I really believe there is, you know, there's got to be a divine consciousness. It may not make them, these things, act because they bite you or whatever, but you can have like a divine communication with butterflies. I've had that. There was a fly. I was working, actually writing on a book that I was working on, and I was in the room that I normally do it, and this fly came over, and it's like he was in love with me, and he was crawling around my hand, and I opened up my hand, and he literally crawled through it. And I could have easily closed it and squashed it, but he had such great trust in me, and he just would not leave me alone. He just kept walking around. He wouldn't fly away. So I just think when we're in the right state, sometimes we glimpse all things, even trees. You can see, like, energetic fields around them. Have you ever noticed that? Like, there's
an
aura of energy around them as well. And now my wife will want me to kill every spider that I see, but I don't like to do that as much. I'd rather let them go outside. She thinks I'm nuts because I think they're all part of,
you know, I understand.
I understand you have to, you can't let bugs run your house, but.
Yes. I get that. And so to that end, the whole purpose, the whole point of this book really is to inspire people, to teach some people some things that they may not have been aware of, and more than anything is to bring harmony to ourselves and to the world.
Yeah.
That's really is my great hope, that over time.
Now, when you were sick with this cancer, did you have, because you were sick for how long did you have the disease?
Well, once I discovered it, the process of having surgery and chemo and all that was about a 7 or 8 month process.
Did you have any experiences, what you call out-of-body experiences, or great awakening moments, or even...
Well, you know what? And, you know, and some people may hear me saying this and think, oh, you know, he was imagining it, but... I will tell you, the night of my surgery, I woke up after surgery in the recovery room, right? I was in intensive care. And I may have mentioned this in the book, where there was a lot of insanity going on in that room. There were only four of us in that room, and I was recovering from the surgery, and the other three were screaming, defecating, maybe they would. One person might have been dying. There was somebody standing over them with the last rites. And it's interesting because it almost reminds me, I don't know if it was the movie Apocalypse Now or Platoon, where Charlie Sheen was looking around him and everything was exploding, but he had this sense of calmness.
That was Platoon, I think, yeah.
Platoon, maybe? I felt that way. I did have a morphine drip. But I had ended it. I had asked them to take me off it, and they did. And I felt no pain.
I remember reading that in the book.
But if you're going to feel pain if we do this, we can't do this. And I said, it's okay. Take me off. I don't want to be on. And I was off the morphine drip for the entire day. and I felt no pain. It was as if I was in this almost altered state, whether I put myself in that state or somehow spirit did, I don't know. But I had no pain, and I had such calmness when there was really insanity going on around me. I just sat there observing. I could not recreate that, no matter how hard I tried. I don't know if that captures it.
I think that's really awesome what you're sharing there, and I think people can relate to that.
Yeah.
It's similar to when my father had cancer and he died in 1984. He was on morphine, and I lived in Mississippi at the time, and he was up in Madison, Wisconsin, and at the hospital there. And I got there the last day he was alive. And you know, spirit arranges things for us, doesn't it? It really does. So that things can time out, and you just wonder, how did that happen? But I saw him prior to that, he would be in and out of it. But he was in such bad shape, they kept him pretty much on the morphine. My visit with him was just going to be him speaking gibberish the whole time, which is what people do, I think, when they're out of their mind on morphine. They just blah, 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 blah. And his eyes were rolled up in the back of his head, and he's looking up at the top of the ceiling, or I don't know where he was looking. And so I was there visiting with him with my mother and my brother, and my mother walked out of the room and said, come on, guys, we got to go now. It's 7 o'clock, and it was at night. So my dad is still speaking gibberish, and I said to my dad, Dad, we got to go now, and we'll see you tomorrow. And as my brother and I started to walk away, he stopped with his gibberish, and he looked right at us and said, no, 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 I want you to stay. Stay here. And we stopped. Our jaw hit the ground, and my mom walks back in, and she says, come on, guys, we got to go. It's closing time. I said, he just talked to us. He just talked to us. And she goes, no, 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 that's impossible. And we thought, well, okay, maybe we both imagine this. And so I said, and my dad, of course, is doing gibberish when my mom walks back in the room. He's doing the gibberish again, so I can't prove it to her. And so she walks out of the room. It's like on cue. She walks out of the room, and I say, Dad, we have to go now. We'll see you tomorrow. And he goes, he stops the gibberish again for a second time. And he goes, okay, see you tomorrow. And then boom, back to the gibberish. It, to me, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like you had this ability.
I don't think it's a conscious ability. I think it's the soul
coming through,
or within us coming through, taking control, taking a stance, doing what it needs to at that moment. And I can also share a very quick story. My mother's in a nursing home in Florida, and she also has got some gibberish going on. And out of nowhere, I was alone with her. This is a few months ago, when she started talking with me with such clarity. It blew my mind. And then all of a sudden went back to her other state of being. And there was no way that that should have been able to happen.
No.
So I think also that, you know, the soul is always there. There's no
it's
change.
It's always there. It's always there. So be careful what you say when you go into a room and somebody's in a
reporting everything.
Yeah, because they definitely hear it and they feel it. And you know what's really cool, too? I found out from one of my aunts afterwards that my father, when he was sick and he was dying, you know, everybody came to see him, and two of his sisters, my aunts, came to see him, and they were just obviously, he was out of it at the time, and so they went outside to get a breath of fresh air, and they came back in, and he goes, I heard you guys. And they said, what do you mean? I heard you guys talking. And they said, well, we were outside. He goes, yeah, I know, I was on the flagpole. I heard what you said. And it wasn't a bad thing. He just knew that they were talking about him. And they were shocked that he would, how would he know this? And it just tells us, again, I think there also are times when our soul will leave our body, times of illness, but it leaves at night, like you say, right, when we have the out-of-body experiences.
Correct.
And then also when people are ill, or if you're in a meditative state, or maybe in a drug, do you never experience anything like that when you were sick?
I always felt, when I was really sick, actually, in the hospital, going back to that, that there was something that was guiding me. Mm. There was something that took over, and I felt very protected. I did. I couldn't really explain what it was.
Did you have a fear of death, Cliff, before this happened?
Absolutely. 100% fear.
And what were you afraid of?
Absolutely.
What did you believe in?
Well, I thought when you were dead, you're dead.
Mm.
You know, father told me that when I was a kid, so I figured when you're dead, you're dead. That, you know, we learn a lot of our lessons from our family.
Right.
But obviously I have a completely different take on it at this point. And I know also, and this might be a good time to mention this, that every soul has a purpose.
Hmm.
We have a reason for being here. Every soul has a purpose and a reason for being here. And so if that reason cannot be fulfilled, or it has been fulfilled, you might witness the passing of somebody.
You might witness...
Somebody might die.
Hmm.
In other words, when someone has fulfilled their purpose for being here...
Oh, okay.
And sometimes it takes an entire lifetime of 90 years, okay, or the body just gives out, that soul has fulfilled its purpose. But there are some times where we scratch our heads because, boy, a young woman like this just died.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And she's got kids. And there are so many aspects to that that we can't understand from our vantage point.
Right, absolutely. We don't know what I think everybody has. We have like this plan before we come here, an outline. And then we also alter it while we're here. We change it. That's the great thing about creating. And we can add to it and subtract and twist it around it. But we have an overall goal or goals that we have that went before we come into this lifetime. And so maybe this lifetime I wanted to learn more compassion or whatever it is that I feel I need to work on. And you get that guidance when you get back there. And when I feel like I've learned that, and maybe if I'm at the end of the cycle, do you believe there's like a cycle that we go through? So if you're like a new soul to the physical incarnation, it may take you many times around to do that. And if you're an old soul that's been here many, many, many times, you may just have to come back for a few years of life or even just a breath as a baby and you're done. Have you heard that? Have they told you that?
I have heard that. I have not been told that specifically. But I'm sure that's possible, because we all are at different stages of development.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly possible. And, you know, if a baby comes into this life and then dies, that's a lesson of compassion
mm-hmm.
for the parents and everyone around them. And that's a lesson right there to be learned. And so we think it's a tragedy, and it is, but from that, you know, the other things evolve.
We don't realize what sacrifices, because as spirits, we don't feel physical pain. So when people put themselves, like these people that are in a place of something horrible that happens, whether it's natural or not, and we all go, oh my goodness, why would a loving God allow that to happen? And I look at it from a perspective of they chose that because they want to wake the rest of us up. We should applaud that they're willing to do that.
Yes, because we all learn something from that. And likewise, not to be negative, but if somebody comes into this world, maybe they're now middle age, and they're stuck, and their soul looks around and says, we're never going to be able to accomplish what we came in for. It may choose to move on.
Mm.
The soul may move on. And so we see someone who's maybe in their 40s die from a heart attack, and we say, oh boy, what a shame. But in fact, that soul may have decided we're not where we're supposed to be. We're never going to get to where we're supposed to be. And I know this may sound a little controversial, but from the spiritual perspective, nobody's died.
Right.
The spirit is still alive and has moved on and will come incarnate again and live again.
And this is a temporary place. You know, it's an illusion. It's a temporary place.
Exactly.
So we view it, obviously, while we're here, we view it as, oh my goodness, this is, and it's like, once we get beyond that, we go, man, what was the big deal? What was I all worked up for? That was nothing.
Yes, I love that word illusion, because there is an illusion here that we're all separate and we're all different colors and we're all, you know, so different. It's an illusion.
It's an illusion because I think, what do you think we are at our source? There's a question I always think is really tells a lot about who we are, and because I think we're all the same. I mean, we have individuality a little bit within that, from my understanding of the teachings, but what are we at our true source, our true essence?
We can choose to look any way we want when we're on the other side.
Okay.
OK. okay, but we're all energy. And eventually, I mean, I did hear someone that I have great respect for who channeled an angel through that said, eventually, there's no sex on the other side. When I say no sex, I mean there's no male or female. It's just energy.
Right.
Eventually. It may take a couple hundred thousand or a million years to get there, but eventually, you're not even coming here. It's a whole other.
You're done with this
reality.
Traveling.
Yeah, because there are many different realities.
Absolutely.
Besides just birth, and you know, we evolve.
I would think there has to be, because it's like an endless journey. You know, the people that we've channeled Source, which is God, if you want to call that. We've done those shows like that, and it just seems like a never-ending journey because you're always going to want to. Source, God, is always creating. We are always. So when we're done with this, what are we going to do next? You're going to sit by the right hand of God the Father. I don't think I'd be happy with that. When I was a little kid, I thought, I'm going to be bored, God. Do I have to do that? Can we play some games here? Is this all serious in heaven?
I once asked that question of what the earth was, and the response was, it is a black hole within a black hole.
Wow.
If you want a technical answer, it was a black hole within a black hole in terms of the way they see the reality, this reality.
Wow. So it's basically just an illusion. All the thoughts are being held together by one creative energy, the one that created all things, God, Source, in from my viewpoint, is the thought that holds all of this so we can experience this. And because of we are the ones that are, the being that created us is experiencing through our experiences, because we're little aspects of that. So everything we came here to do, this is fun. We're like, oh, I'm playing this, I'm learning this, this is great, I've never been physical before, or now I've only been physical 600 times, I still haven't learned, so I'm going to be 600 more times.
Yeah.
And I want to keep going through this.
You take all of the experiences and all the lessons, and you bring it back with you for everyone else.
Do you believe, have you heard of something like the Akashic Records? Have you heard, talked to you about that? And isn't that where they record, everything basically is recorded, whatever you, so you have an access to a library where you can go and say, okay, what did I do back in 1492?
Yeah, correct.
And so...
to be the book of life for each of us, correct?
Book of life, a hall of records that keeps it.
That's
all.
Right.
That keeps it all. It's amazing how you came to this just through learning, and so many people, other people, say the same thing. It's not like we all go to school, and there's a place you can go to learn this because everybody does it slightly different. But what I find, Cliff, that's amazing with you and others, myself included, is that we've kind of all tapped into the same thing. Now, what are the odds of that?
It's just a little too much just to be a coincidence, in other words.
Yeah, and you find, and I find a lot of things, too, that what you're talking about, some of the ancient natives, the natural people to this planet, also have it in their beliefs. The things that
That's
are
right.
metaphysical have been talked about. I have some friends that are ancient Ojibwa teachings, and they talk about a lot of the same things. So I think it's a greater truth that's coming out right now, if you want to label it. And we're all, and your book is one of these that's trying to, your job, Cliff, maybe, is to have these experiences so it would get you to move forward to write a book so that you could inspire the rest of us to be on this wake-up journey.
Seems that way. It seems that I've become the teacher now, that I need to share this so that others can follow this path and they can realize that there's so much more than what they believe they are.
Just as you've learned. And what I think is cool is that those of you that haven't read his book, and I didn't read all of it, but I read most of it, he truly did live it. That's what I like, is that he went to these classes, he was curious, and he wanted to learn more. And a lot of people will give you lip service and say, well, I talked to so-and-so and I did this and this, but you actually lived it, Cliff. That's what really makes your book legitimate, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's Harnessing Heaven, 7 Principles That Can Change Your Life. Is there anything else you want to tell me? Probably many things.
It's very sad what has taken place over the last few weeks here in the news. So
right.
again, I just have to stress that we're here to support and to help each other, and that's the way our souls progress, and that's the way we develop. It's hard to do it alone.
Well,
guys,
and I look at it, and these things, these sad things that take place, if you step back from a bigger perspective, these people really probably, I don't know if how this sits with you, but they planned it out before they even came here. So they could serve mankind. I mean, some of it's drawn in, no question. We draw things in.
Well, then this becomes sort of like the greater the suffering, the greater the knowledge that comes as a result.
Sometimes, right? I think. I think it's one of two things. We either draw things in with our negative thoughts and our fear, so bad things can happen to us, or we're part of a greater process. We're willing to sacrifice as physical beings because we know we go on. So let's say somebody shot me. For whatever reason, and it got on the news, and people had some compassion, maybe my skin color, whatever the case may be, and I see that as all sides involved were players in this before it even came forward, most of the time. Sometimes it's drawn in, but sometimes I think it's pre-planned. So it has to be. So we can all, and we want to blame the shooter. We want to vilify the shooter. And I think they have to be arrested. But I'm also saying, understand that they serve a role as well.
Yes, we all play a role. I'll share the seven-step process for spiritual expansion very quickly.
Okay.
First, be open to possibility.
Be open to possibility. Okay, take your time with them. Go ahead.
Okay. Second, understand the connection between mind, emotions, body, and soul. They are all one. We cannot be out of alignment, okay, or we're going to short-circuit the others.
So our thoughts, how we feel about it.
Mind, body, and soul, yep.
And you stated that it's okay to have emotions, but just let go of the negative ones, right? Sooner or later.
It's good. Well, it's okay, because we're here to experience everything, so it's okay. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to yell and scream, but just, you know, be true to yourself. That's the next part of this, you know? You have to be authentic and be true to yourself. You don't want to be bottled up either, you know? If something bothers you, it's okay, you know? It's okay to question. It's okay to ask why. and that helps you manage your inward and outward feelings and how you express. Because as you become better at expressing your own feelings and communicating, you become more open, and as you become more open, you can start to hear the voice of your soul. And that can come through step five here, which is learning to meditate and quiet the body so you can focus your mind.
Now, when you say meditate, because it's different for everybody else, some people who have this, they won't do it because they think it's this difficult thing, but what do you do when you meditate?
Well, it depends how upset I am. If I'm really upset, I need nice music, maybe classical music. But let's just take an average day, and I'll meditate for 5 to 10 minutes when I'm on that train ride in my commute to New York. And I can do it in 5 or 10 minutes. I just quiet my mind. I quiet my body. If I feel like my feet or my shoulders or my arms or something's a little tense, I tense it up for a second intently, and then I relax it. And then it goes, and I just let it go, and I let it go. And breathing is a very important part of meditating, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The breath, taking some strong inward breaths and then releasing them. So breathing is very important. Concentrate on the breath. You breathe in for 2 seconds or 3 seconds, and you release twice as long. So if you breathe in for 2 seconds, you breathe outward for 4. Okay, and you want to practice that for maybe 30 seconds. No more, you're going to get dizzy. But that is going to start to bring you down. It's going to start to release you. It's going to start to calm you. And once you quiet the body, your mind will then start to follow. And it may take you some time, especially those who don't meditate. You may need a lot of tries at this, but it'll work. And all you need once you start to get better at it, and there's some tapes and CDs you can buy also. Once you get better at it, you just need 5 or 10 minutes a day. And that'll get you a little closer to the other side, especially if you want to do this maybe at night before you go to bed. If you want to be more intent about it, you can join a spiritual circle, a development circle.
Yep.
Practice meditation and raising your own energy vibration. You can raise your own ability to your own psychic senses.
Absolutely.
And then finally, trust. Trust the process and those in the heavenly realm, and have faith in a higher power.
That is so powerful. because I think this is where a lot of good intentions fall short, is because faith almost becomes knowing, doesn't it? Whereas you go from believing, oh, I believe in this, but if you truly just know it, then it becomes more real, as far as where I see it. As if we have great, strong, unshakable faith, yeah. Which right. to me okay. is knowing, just knowing that I know tomorrow, chances are the sun's going to come up. I know tomorrow where I'm going to be. These are all part of my real world because I've allowed that to be part of my knowing. And
right.
if you want to change your world, faith, and it's not faith in a religion, it's faith in yourself or faith in a process, or if you want to say faith in God, but also just knowing that you can become any of these things you want. Don't you feel that it's okay. knowing? You have to get to a point of knowing.
That's great. Okay, so that's a really good... there's something we left out here, TJ, and that's fear.
Mm.
Because yes. beings are fear-based, and a lot of what goes wrong in our own lives and problems that you see out there in the world are fear-based. And so one of the ways to begin to release some of these fears is through faith and through experience.
Yes.
You got to put yourself in a position where you can experience the good in life, where you can experience the fact that we're not alone, if you will. And then you'd be able to, you can move away from some of these fears that we all carry around.
Yeah, I think we all do at some point. And then, you know, and it's also probably testing us, isn't it? You know, just when you conquer it and go, oh, okay, that doesn't bother me, then something else comes along so we can take another step. You ever notice that? It's like you take a step, I've moved past
yeah.
this, and then other things seem to... like synchronicity will line things up for us, and it's like, okay, now what are you gonna do?
Hey, what do you got coming for me now, right?
Yeah. Are you ready to take? And I really believe it. We are the ones that chose that. Again, I don't blame a deity and say, well, God, why are you forsaking me? You know, we have made these decisions in our growth. Maybe this is lifetime number 500, and we're finally going to get over that hurdle and learn to love and not judge others. And this is the lifetime to do it. And what do? Right away, I judge my neighbor. I'm judging everything around me. Look at that.
All the lessons are the plan behind all of our activities.
Yes.
It's just that simple.
Well, I strongly recommend your book. It's a great read, and I really enjoyed it. Harnessing Heaven. It just is out today. If people want to find it. Anything else you want to add, Cliff?
There is a website, harnessingheaven.com, Facebook as well, Harnessing Heaven, and come like us, and obviously on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, and Kindle as well. And let's just all help each other, okay? Because we'll get to that place a lot quicker.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Thanks, TJ.